This sermon is from May 15th, 2011, and is titled The Gospel According to John Wesley, Part 1, Sin, or Why We Need Grace. It's a three-part series where I'm attempting to talk about God's story with the help of John Wesley. Hope you enjoy it.
So, God's story plus your story equals a salvation story. So first, God's story. That collection of writings that begin in Genesis and end in Revelation. That incredible 2,000-year history in the church of courageous men and women who have interpreted the Bible and demonstrated what it means, not only in words, but with their life. God's story that was handed on from your mothers and your grandmothers on and on and on, making possible God's awesome tsunami of love to the entire world. It's a revelation that has begun in our midst, and we all inherit it as an unbelievable gift from God. But then there's your story, your highs and your lows, your ebbs and your flows, the tears and the toils and the troubles, the sweat and the struggle. Those moments in life that couldn't seem any better, holding a new baby or grandbaby. The moment where the doctor told you you have that clean bill of health. Or maybe that moment of just recognizing how blessed you are to live in a place like Rifle, Colorado, with the mountains that surround you every day. And your story has more details. Where you grew up, how your parents raised you. Your story has a beauty to it that we can't summarize in 30 seconds, every one of you. But what's beautiful is that when God's story syncs or comes together with your story, it creates a salvation story. A story of God's love and your life coming together in a love that transforms the world. God's story plus your story equals a salvation story. And I think of it kind of like a dance. When we dance with God's story, when we learn the movements, I can't dance, so this part's going to be real rough. When we learn that rhythm and that movement to God's story, something beautiful happens. Something compelling happens. Of course, there's the whole problem that sometimes we decide not to dance. We pout and moan, and we're all susceptible to this. Sometimes we try to control the dance, forcing its moves upon God, and I've kind of learned that God isn't really into that. And then lastly, sometimes we dance, and we dance well. And there's harmony, and there's reconciliation, and there's love, and there's beauty that happens in that dance between God and our story. And then there's this beautiful verse in Zephaniah 3:17 that says this of the syncing between God's story and our story. God will rejoice over you with gladness. God will renew you in his love. God will exult over you with singing. When we dance with God's story, when we dance well, we experience God singing over every one of our life. So, God's story, this amazing story from Genesis to Revelation, we're going to take a deep breath for the next 3 weeks, and we're going to take a look at God's story. But every good story has certain plot elements to it. Every good story needs a context. Background information needed to make sense of the story's action. And every good story needs complications. These are the conflicts that lead to the moment of ultimate tension. Every good story needs a crisis point or a moment of greatest tension. Every good story needs climbing action, the moment or process where the complications are resolved. And of course, every good story needs a good conclusion. Or, as we learn to say in literature classes, I hope we still learn this, the denouement of the story. It's just fun to say that word. So every good story has these elements. And then there's Chris's drawing. what begins out of our context, the complications, the crisis point, the climbing action, and the conclusion. Our lives are lived in story, in this awesome tension and dance with God's story and with your beautiful story. It's amazing when you think about it. So this week, we will look at the context and complications. Next week, we'll look at that crisis point in God's story. And then for our last week, on the 29th, we'll look at the climbing action and conclusion of God's story. All the while keeping in mind that God's story means nothing without our stories intricately linked and synced with one another. And may I suggest to you that compelling stories go beyond just being good stories, and that they call us to something bigger. They call us outside of ourselves to something beautiful and big, and sometimes it's scary. But that's how God's story works. So, as we come and move on with one another, we come to John Wesley. John Wesley is the founder of the Methodist Church, as many of you know. But John Wesley was a man who thought deeply about God's story. So John Wesley will journey with us in these 3 weeks. And one thing about John Wesley that you need to know, he was an Englishman. Don't take that against him. He often thought outside of the box. And of course, when people think outside of the box, most times they try to get rid of him. And what he started was a revolution called the Methodist Church, what we call the Methodist Church. And basically what he sought to do is something radical, is poor people, marginalized people, people on the outcasts of society, common, everyday people, deserve to hear God's story. They deserved a place to respond to God's story. So what he would do in the 18th century was, of course, you know, the Industrial Revolution was going on, and John Wesley did something radical, said that the church should actually go to the people. And so John Wesley would go out on the side, and as all those industrial workers walked day in and day out to work, he would preach the good news. He would tell them God's story of love over their life. And of course, this set into motion that dance, that revolution. And of course, that tidal wave we inherited in America. And if you know much about American history, Methodism had a huge shaper of American history. It's an amazing story. So we think with John Wesley and we start at context. So John Wesley reads the book of Genesis and he says, the story that forms and shapes all of our life is that of love. In the beginning, God, compelled by love, created human beings in God's image and in God's likeness. For Wesley, this is a big, huge deal. We all are created in God's image and likeness. And in the very beginning, we were creatures of infinite worth and respect and power. We had the ability to model God's love perfectly within our life. John Wesley said this, God is love. Accordingly, man and his creation was full of love, which was the sole principle of all his tempers, thoughts, words, and actions. God is full of justice, mercy, and truth. So was man as he came from the hands of his creator. Incredible. Then John Wesley says, of course, he's got to break it down for us, that being made in God's image means that we have a natural image, a political image, and a moral image. So our natural image, John Wesley said, was the ability to understand, the free will to choose, and the liberty to cultivate virtue. Then John Wesley said, being made in God's image means we have a political image, the ability to be in relationship with God, other humans, and all of creation. There was this dynamic reality to our relationships with others that was full of justice and love for all. And then we are made in God's moral image, meaning that we have direct knowledge of God, the one who creates and sustains our life from the beginning until the very end of our life. So this incredible picture of being in this Garden of Eden with God, of modeling perfectly the image of God, John Wesley says this, love filled the whole expansion of his soul. It possessed him without a rival. So we are in awe and wonder and awesomeness at a God who would create us with such power, with such abilities. And then came a sneaky little serpent. And the next step in God's story, as told by John Wesley, is the complications. All of those human frailties that we know all too well, our fears and our frailties. And John Wesley is particularly interested in Adam and Eve, of course. And for John Wesley, this story is a centerpiece in his theology. He believes that Adam and Eve made a decision to trust the serpent and not to trust God. And for John Wesley, this was like a legally binding contract that once humankind had trusted in the serpent instead of God, it set this downfall into motion in the Christian story. It sent this downward spiral for us all, where we all now exist in a corrupted state. We have fallen from this high and mighty spot that we were created for. So we come to this period, and John Wesley uses some dark, stark realities to describe this. He says the image of God within us was now corrupted, fallen. It was debased. It was decayed. It was defaced. It was deformed. It was in bondage, in debt. It was filled with guilt, with shame, and with pain. That is the picture that John Wesley gives us of the complications, which Chris portrayed as that heavy rock we're trying to bear as we're steepling down the mountainside, looking for something more that can satisfy and transform our life. Then Wesley says this: indeed, we are already bound hand and foot by the chains of our own sins. These, considered with regards to ourselves, are chains of iron and fetters of brass. They are wounds wherewith the world, the flesh, and the devil have gashed and mangled us all over. They are diseases that drink up our blood and spirits, that bring us down to the chambers of the grave. But considered as they are here with regard to God, they are debts immense and numerous. Well, therefore, seeing we have nothing to pay, may we cry unto him. And of course, when we look at this picture of humanity, this picture we all have experienced at times, we also are reminded that it's not just an individual story, that systems and institutions can become debased, deformed, corrupted. And these systems and institutions can enslave us, can hurt us deeply. Brothers and sisters can hurt one another deeply. So, of course, many of us ask the question, well, how does it make sense then that so many people we know, people outside of the church who live good lives, how do they live such good lives if this is the reality? And, of course, Wesley has a beautiful answer for that. The answer comes in one word: grace. And Wesley has this incredible understanding of grace. It's the most robust thing. It transforms this story. Grace. God's unmerited favor, God's steadfast love, God's unbelievable compassion and love for all of humanity. And Wesley talked about free grace. Free grace being the rain that rains upon our life. From the beginning of our time in the womb till its very end, there is a rain in our life. This rain is a sheer gift. No human can give it to you and no human can take it away. It is the gift that enables us to be who God created us to be. When we're in the depth of despair, when we're at the bottom of the pit, it rains on us. God's love, constantly ever flowing, love from the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, free grace. But then Wesley has another concept that I call responsible grace. And the image that this captures to me is that, so God's grace enables us to get out from the pit, but God's grace also guides, encourages, points the way forward to us like a belayer. In the picture here, you see a belayer who supports the climber. And responsible grace for Wesley is that we are also given the ability to be different people, to return to that image of God that began way over here through climbing up. And God's supporting us that way. Responsible grace. Beautiful pictures. Free grace enables us to get back on the right road. And responsible grace helps us to find that road, to climb higher and higher towards who God meant for each and every one of us to become. Beautiful pictures. Wesley says this, everyone has some measure of that light, some faint glimmering ray, which sooner or later, more or less, enlightens every man or woman that cometh into the world. In Wesley's story, God's story as told by Wesley, it's full of grace. Even though we have to go through the pit of despair and pain and shame and hurt, somehow God's story leads us from our brokenness to our beauty. But that's next week's sermon. We conclude today reminding ourselves that rain is all around us. God's loving grace. And that we, the rope is secured for us. We can climb to the heights with our God of love. So the question remains, will we trust the one who's at that rope, securing for us any fears or failures, and climb with God to the heights? Amen.